with Sergeant Leeper.
Sergeant Paul Leeper, one of the arresting officers of the five men inside the Democratic National Committee headquarters. He is a plainclothes officer.
Activities shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Sergeant Leeper, for the record, would you please state your name and your address?
My name is Paul William Leeper. I'm a sergeant assigned to Metropolitan Police Department. My address is 2301 L Street, Northwest, Washington, D.C.
And how long have you been a police officer, Sergeant?
I'm in my 12th year, sir.
And a sergeant?
And for the last 2.5, 3 years, sir.
And what is your assignment in the police department?
My assignment right now, sir, is I'm in charge of the 2nd District's Casual Clothes Squad.
And where does that operate? What is the area or region of the city?
In the area of the Watergate complex, the White House down that area.
And was that your position on June 17, 1972?
Yes, sir. We were working in that area.
Now, Sergeant, is the dress that you are presently wearing at this committee hearing the type of dress that you usually wear in your occupation?
No, sir.
What is your usual dress?
Well, we vary anything from old army shirts to golf jackets, golf hats, casual clothes. I had a pair of blue slacks on, a blue jacket with a university right across the front of it, and a golf cap.
And in the police automobile that you use, is this a marked automobile or an unmarked automobile?
No, sir, it's unmarked.
And was that the kind of automobile that you were in on June 17, 1972?
Yes, sir.
All right. Now, can we have first chart 5? While they're getting the chart, Sergeant, can you tell us, did there come a time sometime early in the morning of June 17 or late in the evening, whatever time it occurred of June 16, that you received a call to come to the vicinity of the Watergate complex in Washington, D.C.?
Yes, sir.
What was the nature of that call?
Well, the call came out at about 0152 hours on the morning of the 17th, Saturday, and the call originally came out for any scout car, which would be a marked vehicle on the police department, and an official unit to respond to the Watergate, 2600 Virginia Avenue, to assist a special officer.
The official vehicle would be either a sergeant, lieutenant, or a captain's cruiser. These would be marked vehicles. No one answered up, and the police dispatcher then came over there and asked if there was any TAC unit in the area. At that time,
what unit?
TAC unit. They refer to us, Senator, as casual clothes, a tactical squad, and they have other names.
TAC unit.
Yes, sir.
That's short for tactical unit. Right?
Tactical unit. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
And at this time, I was working in Cruiser 727, which is an unmarked police vehicle, with Officer John Barrett and Officer Carl Schaffner.
And where were you located when you received that call?
We were in the area of the about 30th and Kaser, Northwest Washington, D.C.
How close was that to the Watergate complex?
Approximately about a minute and a half, 2 minutes away.
If you can see chart, which is on the easel, and if not, can you go to it? Do you recognize the photograph that appears on that easel?
Yes, sir. It's of the Watergate complex.
What does it represent?
The Watergate complex and the Howard Johnson across from it. The Kennedy Center's on down from it.
And the
general area of the Watergate complex.
Right. Is that where you went to with your automobile on that early morning of June 17?
Yes, sir.
Can we have chart number 6?
Let the record show the chart number one, the chart number five, I believe it is.
Yeah, will be marked as exhibit.
It is. It'll be marked appropriately by the record, by the report as exhibit.
Now, sorry, we're getting a little closer. I think what do you see there on that photo?
That would be the Virginia Avenue side of the Watergate complex, 2600 block Virginia Avenue Northwest.
All right, can we have that next chart now? It's I think chart number six. And can the chart that had just been exhibited be identified as an exhibit?
And that chart number five be appropriately numbered by the report.
All right, now, can you identify Sergeant, as to the Watergate and the Howard Johnson? What does it show to you?
It shows the Watergate, the sixth floor, the Democratic National Committee, in relationship to the Howard Johnson, which is located across the street from it.
Now, did you have anything to do with the Howard Johnson location when you arrived and answered that call?
No, other than the fact that when we were on the balcony of the Watergate.
What balcony was that, sir?
That was the sixth floor, the balcony of the Democratic National Committee.
And would that be where the space is on the left?
Yes, sir. It's where it has it marked there, sir, directly across from the Howard Johnson.
All right. Why don't we hold that? Now, can we have the next chart, which should be chart number seven?
Chart number six.
What chart do you have that marked as? Because I have somebody. Yeah, that's an exhibit number. I think the exhibit numbers and the difference is that these charts, Sergeant Lieber, you recognize these charts.
Yes, sir.
You've seen them before.
Yes, sir.
These charts were used at the trial in the Watergate case in January.
Yes, sir.
And you did testify at that trial.
I did.
And when you did use these charts. And the exhibit and the numbers that appear on the right-hand corner were the trial exhibits. Now, what is the... letter show. Could you identify that chart and what it portrays?
Yes, sir. That's the layout of the Democratic National Headquarters, the sixth floor.
All right. Now, could you, Sergeant, go to the chart? When you arrived on the call and came to the Watergate complex, could you now state and at such point as you arrived at the chart, indicate your entry and what you did and show on the chart what you and those officers accompanying you did?
All right, you want me to start, sir, from the time we arrived in front of the Watergate?
Yes, from the time you arrived in front of the Watergate.
All right, after the call went out, we responded from the area of 30th and K down to the front of the Watergate. We had to park about seven car lengths up from the main door going into the lobby of the Watergate complex. At that time, myself, Officer Barrett, and Officer Schaffner got out of the vehicle, up the steps into the lobby where we were met by the special police officer who had put the call out.
Do you know his name, Sergeant?
Wills, Frank Wills.
When you say special police officer, was he an employee of the Watergate?
No, he's an employee for a guard service that is hard by the Watergate complex.
But his responsibilities, as you know it, was that as a guard for the Watergate?
Yes, sir.
All right. Continue, Sergeant.
We conferred with him there in the lobby, and at that time he brought it to our attention. He had made his rounds about 20 minutes, 30 minutes prior to this, and found tape on one of the doors leading from the B1 level, from the garage into the B1 level.
Now, when you say tape on one of the doors, could you explain that? What do you mean, or what did he mean to you, and what did you understand him to mean as tape on the door?
Well, at that time, sir, we really didn't understanding, you know, what he meant by it. We responded down to the area where the tape was found, and that after looking at the door had been taped with a sort of a light-colored mastic tape, where the door would shut, and from all appearances, the door would be locked, but the lock is held in by the tape, where the door will shut, but it will not lock.
So this tape was on the edge of the door.
Yes, sir.
Forcing back the lock that would ordinarily spring and lock the door.
Yes, sir.
And keeping it from being locked.
Yes, sir.
And what did you understand the purpose of that taping to be then?
At that time, it would give anyone that was wanting to go in and out accessibility without having to use a key or to a pick or something to unlock it.
Now, did you know whether these doors locked from the outside and only or from both sides?
With the lock-in, you could not get in from the outside, and I believe that when we investigated down, you couldn't get in also from the inside. So that double locking type door, yes, sir.
So somebody who were able to get inside, if wanted to get outside, and didn't have a key, he'd have to tape the edge in order to get
out. That's permanent, sir.
All right, now proceed, and what did you do thereafter?
Well, at this point, after finding the door leading, it's not on this map here, but I mean on this chart, but the door leading from the garage level into a small cubicle was taped. Also, the door leading from the cubicle into the stairwell was also taped. And not only the guard, but we had prior knowledge from our crime reports of burglaries and burglary attempts on the 6th and the 8th floor of the Watergate complex. And the guard, I think, brought it to our attention that time, too. They had some problems up there with attempt burglaries. So at that time, we sent the guard back to the area of the where we had met him in the lobby in case we figured we had somebody inside at this time. We had a burglary going down on us. We sent him back to the lobby, and myself, Officer Barrett, and Officer Schaffner responded to the 8th floor by way of the stairwells. When we arrived at the 8th floor, which is the Federal Reserve Board, the door leading from the stairwell to the offices on the 8th floor was also taped in the same manner, same type of tape. There was a guard with us at that time, a guard by the name of Helms, who is a guard for the Federal Reserve Board, and his two assignments are the 8th floor and the B1 level, which they have some offices on, the Federal Reserve Board. We begin a check of the 8th floor with that guard. He was supposed to have keys to most of the offices. He couldn't get any of his keys to work any of the office doors, and all of them were locked. We had found no other evidence of any tampering with any of the office doors leading off of the main hallway on the 8th floor. At that time, we responded back out to the stairwell. I directed that guard to respond back to the lobby to assist the other special officer in case anyone was in the building and doubled back on us in any way. At that time, Officer Barrett responded to the 9th floor, and Schaffner and myself responded down to the 7th floor. The door...
So you were going down the stairwell.
Yes, sir. We're in the stairwell right now, the Watergate complex. It'd be this stairwell here, these stairwells here, sir.
I'm going down from the 8th...
Myself and Officer Schaffner is going down. Officer Barrett is checking the 9th floor. The 7th... floor door leading from the stairwell was locked. There was no evidence of any tampering at that door. We responded down to the sixth floor. The door leading from the stairwell had been taped in the same manner. At that time, I responded around toward the corner of the stairwell and yelled for Officer Barrett to meet us down there.
When you used the term responded, Sergeant, you mean you went in?
Well, I walked around about halfway up to the 7th floor and yelled for Barrett. I said, we have another door taped down here. Respond down here. Come down here to assist us.
Yeah.
At that time, the three of us went into the 6th floor of the Watergate complex, which is the National Democratic Committee. We came in through here. We begin a check of the offices that were open. Some were open, some were closed. When we got into this area, we responded down to this door.
Was it dark? Was it lit? Were there any lights on?
There were some lights on, sir. Yes, sir. And as we would check each room, we would flip the light switch on.
So you were flipping lights on?
Yes, sir. On and off. This door here was locked tight. We came back up this hallway and began a search of these floors here. Myself and Officer Schaffler went into this room because this door here was propped open with a chair, which would, you know, led us to believe we might have surprised somebody, then he ran out on the balcony. We went out on the balcony and began a search of the terrace.
Now you're referring to the time you testified a little earlier.
Yes, sir. That
going
puts
out on
us.
That balcony. That's the balcony you referred to in the
that
earlier.
That puts
chart.
Us right across from the Howard Johnson Motor Lodge. Yes, sir.
What if anything did you see when you went out on that terrace?
We searched the terrace with negative results, but as we were coming back in, Officer Schaffner said to me, he said, "Do you think that man, something to the effect," he said, "that man across the street that sees us," because at the time we had our officer.
When you say, when he said across the street, did he mean on the pavement?
No, at the Howard Johnson, on the balconies of the Howard Johnson.
And was it at a level sort of parallel to the terrace where you were on?
Yes, sir. And Officer Schaffner had his weapon out at the time, and he called to my attention. He says, "That man across the street's watching us. I wonder if he'll call the police."
Just one second. I don't mean to unduly interrupt counsel, but just so I can keep the continuity in my mind, that man across the street was in the Howard Johnson's?
That's affirmative, sir.
Where?
He was out on a balcony. I did not see him, Senator.
That man across the street at the Howard Johnson's was Alfred Baldwin, who monitored the wiretapped phones of R. Spencer Oliver at the Democratic National Committee.
I just had your guns out.
I did not have my gun out, but Officer Schaffner had his weapon out.
And you were on the floor of the DNC, the Democratic National Committee?
Yes, sir.
The balcony outside it?
Well, it's referred to as the terrorist here, sir.
Who was that fellow?
It was later found to be James Baldwin.
You know how long Baldwin watched you?
I think from the time we pulled up in front, he said in court.
Thank you.
Then what did you do after you left? Did you leave the terrace at that time?
Yes, sir. We responded back in the area of the hallway. We met up again with Officer Barrett down to this area, checking the offices that were open as we came down the hallway. We came into this room here through a glass door. Officer Barrett was the first man through, followed by myself and Officer Schaffler. Officer Barrett responded up into this area here, and I started into this little secretary or cubicle here. Officer Schaffler was somewhere in this area, and at this point I heard Officer Barrett yell, "Hold it, come out."
Where was that voice coming from?
Right in this area, right here, sir.
Right.
Officer Barrett was right in this area. At this time, I responded back out of the cubicle, into this cubicle, jumped up on a desk, drawing my weapon, and when I looked over this glass partition, there was five men standing in front of a desk with their hands either raised above their heads or at least shoulder high, wearing blue surgical gloves.
And what, if anything, did you see them doing, or at least at the time that they were, because their hands were up when you had your guns out on them?
Well, some of the gentlemen, sir, had tried to remove the gloves by using one hand and trying to pull it off with the other.
Did you notice any kind of equipment or paraphernalia in and around where you found the men?
Yes, sir. One of the men was carrying an AWOL bag, an overnight bag, a semi-large brown bag with his coat draped over it, and it contained various items, cameras, bulbs, clamps for clamping the cameras to the desk, walkie-talkies, things of that sort.
Now, just going down towards the corner there from that room where you apprehended the men, the corner towards the bottom right corner, go all the way down to the large office in the corner there.
Right in here, sir?
No, the large office at the very corner, the edge, the very edge, yes. Whose office is that?
That's the office of the chairman at that time of the Democratic Party was Lawrence F. O'Brien.
Was there entrance to that office or access to it from where you found the men you apprehended?
Yes, sir. As you can see by the chart, sir, you have access to that office.
And next to that office, to the left, whose office was that?
That's the deputy chairman, sir, Stanley L. Gregg.
Craig. Now, did you, at that point, what did you do with the men who you apprehended at that point?
We ordered them out from behind the desk and lined them up along the wall here, facing the wall, hands on the wall, feet spread apart. And at that time, I informed them who we were. They wanted arrest for burglary and advised them of their rights. And at that, and then I directed Officer Barrett to begin a systematic search of each man.
Did you notice, if anything, unusual about these men in the when you arrested them? The way they were dressed? Or
they were well dressed, or in either suits, sport coats, and ties.
Now, do you know the names of those people? Did they give their names at that time to you?
At that time, no, sir.
Did they give any names to you?
Later in the, when they were booked in the precinct, 2nd District Headquarters, 2301 L Street, they gave us names, which later proved to be false names, aliases.
Did you later find out who they were?
Yes, sir.
Could you name the persons who you arrested in that location by the by the names that you later found out who they were to be?
Frank Sturgis, Bernard L. Barker, James McCord, Eugenio Martinez, and I think it's Virgio Gonzalez. Virgio Gonzalez, I believe, the way he pronounces it.
Now, did you accompany them down to the station house?
Yes, sir. We sent three of them down in a patrol wagon. One was transported, I think Mr. McCord was transported in an 83 Scout, and I transported Mr. Barker in the old closed tack cruiser, the unmarked cruiser.
Now, at a later time, did you come back and make any search of any room in the Watergate complex?
I came back to the Watergate complex, but the search was made by our mobile crime unit. They, from the time we could get in touch with them, they handled all the searching of the rooms and all the fingerprinting and processing.
Well, what rooms were searched?
Well, the mobile crime did a search of the whole sixth floor complex, the conference room, all these rooms along here. Are you referring to
Were there
one?
Any other rooms in either a hotel or any other place of the complex? Was all
yes, sir. We obtained search warrants at about 2:30 in the afternoon. That would be Saturday afternoon on June 17th, and went into rooms 214 and 314 of the Watergate Hotel.
What led you to get the search warrant?
Well, we checked the register to see who was registered at the Watergate. And I think they also checked the Howard Johnson across the street, and some of the fictitious names these gentlemen had used were on the registers of the Watergate Hotel.
Could you state briefly what, if anything, was found in that search of the hotel room?
More electrical equipment, more blue surgical gloves, about $4,200 and $100 bills, all in sequence, all brand new $100 bills. Some electronic or equipment, things of that sort.
Sergeant, could you shed any light? Were you present, or did you have any knowledge of any check that was found in any one of these defendants or notebooks that had the name E. Howard Hunt on it?
I was on the search team that went into room 214 of the Watergate Hotel. It was myself and Detective Robert Dinnell of our department, Carl Schaffner, and a agent from the Washington Field Office of the FBI, and also one of the men from Mobile Crime, Don Cherry, assisted us. And at that time, it was called to my attention that they did find a book with the name...
Found what?
A small notebook, as you described, with the name that you have brought out in it.
The name E. Howard Hunt, is that the name you
were... I believe it said E. Hunt, W.H. on it, sir.
Are you aware of the finding on any persons of the defendants or anywhere in the room, any check that was signed by Mr. Hunt?
No, sir, not to my knowledge.
Did you do anything else that evening or that morning or the following day with regard to these defendants?
Well, I was at the 2nd District Headquarters when we attempted to process these men for court, and I didn't do actually any of the the paperwork. We were assisted by some detectives, and Officer Barrett stayed on the scene down there. The Watergate to meet. We was trying to get in touch with somebody from the Democratic National Committee, and later Mr. Stanley Craig came down, and he was brought to the station by Officer Barrett, at which time he was showing the five defendants to see if they had any right to be in the building, be in that area, the sixth floor, at which time he stated they did not.
Now, at the time of the arrest, did you know whether any of those persons apprehended were employed or any relationship with the Committee for the Re-election of the President?
No, sir.
Did you learn at any time that any of them did?
Well, after it hit the wire services and the press started picking it up, yes.
You learned it from the press?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I have no further questions. Sorry. Did you find any money on any of the individuals that were apprehended?
Yes, sir. We found quite a bit of money. Not quite a bit. I would say about $3,600, all in $100 bills, all in the same sequence.
Was it $3,600?
I could give you a close estimate if I could refer to my...
All right, could you leave the chart now on the back of the table? Could you refer to your records and could you give us some more specific statement as to the amount of money you found on any of the individuals and on whom, and also in the hotel room?
From the defendant, Edward Joseph Hamilton, which would be Frank Sturgis, was approximately $215 in bills. From the defendant, Frank Carter, which would be Bernard Barker, was approximately $230 in bills, two of which were $100 bills, and also Sturgis, two of the $215 he had was in $100 bills. From the defendant, Gene Valdez, was $814 in bills, seven of which were $100 bills. That would be Martinez, Eugenio Martinez. From Godoy, Raul Godoy, was $230 in bills. Now he would be, his real name would be Virgil Gonzalez, was $230 in bills, two of which were $100 bills. From Mr. McCord, who used the alias of Edward Joseph Warren, no money was found on him. No, as far as...
Your record of how much money was found in the room... Under the room search in the hotel, part of the Watergate.
Yes, sir. There was $3,566.58. There was four packs of brand new $100 bills, eight in a pack, so it would be $3,200 in $100 bills, all in the same sequence.
Sergeant, did you or someone make a record of all the serial numbers of those bills?
Yes, sir. The mobile crime, which was Don Cherry, was on the scene with
me. All right, would you provide the committee a list, if we not already have it, of those serial numbers? It's not necessary to read them at this point in the record. But
yes, sir.
All right. Now, there come a time when after the defendants were apprehended down at the station, that any attorneys appeared on their behalf?
Yes, sir. And I will state to you, these gentlemen refused to make any phone calls and refused to have us to notify anyone at all.
So they didn't make any phone call out
that you know of?
No, sir. No, sir. And it was around, probably around 9:30 Saturday morning, still in the a.m., that two attorneys did come to the 2nd District Headquarters at 2301 L Street and state that they were there to represent the five defendants.
You have their names, Sergeant?
Their names was Douglas Caddy and Mr. Rafferty's name. I don't know his first name. It might be James Rafferty, I think.
Mr. Chairman, I have no further questions.
I defer to the chair, Mr. Chairman. I have no questions.
What was the name of the second volume? The last name?
Mr. Rafferty, sir.
Oh, yes. What time did they appear?
It was around 9 o'clock.
And they appeared notwithstanding the fact that no phone call had been made by any of the persons that you arrested.
That's correct, Senator. The defendants made no calls, and in fact, they wouldn't let us call anyone for them. They wanted no calls made.
But the serial number of these $100 bills, new bills?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
And you took the serial number of all of the bills down, and you will supply the serial number to the committee?
Yes, sir.
I have no further questions.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. I'll try my best to be brief. Sergeant, what time did you ordinarily work? What was your shift?
We were working a 4 to 12 shift, sir.
From 4 in the afternoon to 12 at night?
Yes, sir.
I take it then you worked late this night?
Very late, sir.
Was that on account of the workload or some other reason?
Yes, sir. We have quite a few office buildings in our area. We have quite a few burglaries in those office buildings.
Is that part of the tax squad or casual clothes squad responsibility to canvas and protect these office buildings?
Any type of crime, sir, but mainly street robberies, commercial robberies, burglaries, larceny, smottos. We work over quite a bit trying to combat this.
1:52 in the morning when you received the call. Was the call to you, or did you volunteer to take the call?
We volunteered to call when the dispatcher stated, is there any TAC unit in the area? And at that time, Officer Schaffner picked up the mic. He was riding on my right. I was driving. And stated, we're a TAC unit, and we have a sergeant on board, and that's when we got into the affair.
And I'm not trying to imply anything, but this was almost 2 hours past your regular shift time.
Yes, sir.
Now, you've described for Mr. Dash at some length how you entered the building and went to the 6th floor where the Democratic National Committee headquarters were then located. And I understand that you and who else were on the balcony? What was the name of the
officer?
Officer
Schaffner, Carl Schaffner.
At that time, no one had been discovered inside?
No, sir.
And you and Schaffner were on the balcony, which is on the Virginia Avenue side facing the Howard Johnson?
Yes, sir.
And you or Schaffner or both saw a man across the street on a balcony facing you on the Howard Johnson's
I did not see the man, Senator. It was brought to my attention by Carl. He says, I wonder if that man over there is going to call the police. And then I said,
why did he say that?
Well, the way we're dressed and him having his gun out. You know, the average...
Was the gun clearly visible?
It was described in court by Mr. Baldwin in much detail, yes, sir.
Yeah. Well, what did Mr. Baldwin do, you know?
I believe at that time he was... on a walkie-talkie, talking to one of the gentlemen who was down the hall from us.
Could you see that?
No, sir. This is just what he's testified to in court.
It's what Mr. Baldwin said.
Yes, sir.
Is Mr. Schaffner here with you? Officer?
No, sir.
Schaffner?
No, sir.
Have you ever discussed with him whether he saw what Mr. Baldwin did or not?
No, sir. I don't believe it. If once Mr. Baldwin had went off the balcony of the Harry Johnson, there would have been no way that Carl could have seen what he would have done, plus the fact we were moving pretty fast. We were coming in off the terrace, going back in to meet Officer Barrett inside to search the rest of the building.
Is there any doubt in your mind that Baldwin saw you and Schaffner on the balcony?
No, sir. In fact, Senator, in court, he described my outfit almost to a T,
yeah.
What I was wearing.
Thank you.
I think, Mr. Chairman, at some point, not today, obviously, but I'd like to add Mr. Schafter's name to the list. I'd like to hear his firsthand testimony on that as well. I have no further questions at this point.
Sergeant Leap, let me ask you about the demeanor of the people that you arrested. Did they seem light, confident, and sure of themselves?
Yes, sir.
Senator Herman Talmadge, Democrat of Georgia.
Take care of them.
Well, I'll say this, Senator. They were probably five of the easiest lockups I've ever had as far as...
Then you knew from the demeanor of the witness, of the people you arrested, the prisoners, the sophistication of their equipment and their dress, that you didn't have ordinary burglars on your hands, did you not?
Yes, sir.
From the time you arrested the suspects on, did you ever have any contact with FBI agents or the U.S. Attorney's Office personnel?
Yes, sir. And the FBI agent that worked closest with us on this case was Special Agent Lano, Angie Lano. And at the time of the search warrants, when we went down and got the search warrants and served the search warrants, we were assisted by Chuck Wirt, United States Attorney. He assisted us in the search warrants, and he was with us when we served the search warrants on the two rooms of the Howard Johnson and the vehicle located in the basement, I'm sorry, the Watergate, and the vehicle located in the basement of the Watergate.
Did you have any further contact thereafter?
Well, when we went to court on the case, sir, we were, the case was handled by U.S. Attorney Earl Silbert, Mr. Donald Campbell, and Mr. Seymour Glanzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. No further questions,
sir. Mr. Chairman, might I impose on my colleagues just for 1 minute? There was one question I meant to ask them that I overlooked, and it won't take but just a second. You testified, Sergeant, that, as I recall, no telephone calls were made by the prisoners.
That's affirmative, sir.
But, and the next morning at 9-something or other, two lawyers appeared.
Yes, sir.
Now, did anyone else besides lawyers appear?
No, other than Mr. Stanley Gregg, whom we brought down to the station in order to, he was used as the complainant on the 251, which is a police report. And of course, there was a lot of police. You mean other than police personnel?
No, yes, other than police personnel. Anybody appear to make bond for them or to talk to them or to represent them, whether they were lawyers or anyone else?
No, sir, not to my knowledge.
Who would know that?
Well, I was there from the time of the arrest till 7 o'clock Saturday night, and I had occasion to meet anyone, you know, other than the two lawyers that came in. And in fact, I didn't talk to them. They talked to Assistant Chief
Reed. So we can be safe in assuming that no one else talked to these prisoners from the time you took them to the station house until 7 o'clock the evening of June 17th, except the two lawyers that you've identified, other than police officials,
yes, sir,
FBI officials. Anybody else?
No, sir.
Thank you. Thank you.
Sergeant, did you or any of the other police in the station house find out how these lawyers knew these people were there under your custody?
No, sir. I believe when they came in, I didn't talk to them when they came in, but I understand they said to the station clerk, the first police officer they had contact with, we're here to represent the five men that are locked up.
But no one asked them who advised them?
No, the officer didn't. He should have asked them at that time, well, what are their names, but he didn't. He just referred them to the Assistant Chief Wright, who talked to him from then on.
Did you ever find out who did call him? And...
I know, sir.
No further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Howard. Thank you. Sergeant Leap, you've indicated that the men you arrested all gave false names.
Yes, sir.
In your search of the, in your physical search, did you come across any identity papers or papers to identify these men?
Well, Senator, Mr. Sturgis, Frank Sturgis, who used the name of Hamilton, he had a visa from Mexico in an alias name. Mr. McCord, I'm not sure on the driver's license. Also, Mr. Sturgis had a driver's license, I believe, either from New York State or Massachusetts.
Was it made out in their real names?
No, he also used the name of Frank Fornini. He had about three or four different aliases.
So all of these identity papers were in their false names?
Yes, sir.
Did you check to see where they got these identity papers?
No, Senator. From after the arrests were made and the defendants booked, a lot of the legwork, so to speak, the investigative work, was picked up by the Washington Field Office and our burglary squad. It was almost, in reality, taken out of our hands. In other words, we did not go over to National Airport and find out what plane they had flew in on and things of that.
Are these identity papers still available?
Yes, sir. They're either held by U.S. Attorney's Office, which is still, you know, involved in this case, or they would be down at our property office.
Were they very professionally made?
I couldn't comment on that, sir. I'm not, I don't think I have the qualifications to say that, whether they were or weren't.
Mr. Chairman, may we request to have these identity papers?
We may have, if we have some of the exhibits that were turned over by the police department. Mr. Thompson, do we have that?
Mr. Leeper, you've indicated that in the service of your search warrant, you had an assistant United States attorney, Mr. Charles Work, with you. Is it the usual procedure to have an assistant United States attorney in a burglary case?
No, sir, but being the where this burglary had occurred, the dress and manner of these men, we felt that it was just a little bit bigger than the average burglary that goes
so
down in the city.
The D.C. Police Department requested the assistance of
Yes,
the...
sir. I think Inspector Charles M. Monroe was the night inspector who assisted us on it, and I think he requested through the chief's office to get this attorney to...
You've also indicated that you had a meeting with Mr. Silbert.
I've had many meetings with him, yes, sir.
What was the nature of your conversations?
Preparing myself, Officer Barrett, and Officer Schaffner for the case when it went in front of the court, when it went to court.
It has been reported that when Mr. McCord was taken to the station, he was recognized by several officers. Is that true?
Senator, I didn't leave that station just for, you know, on and off, maybe to go down to the Watergate to serve the search warrants till 7 o'clock the next night. I didn't go to court with Mr. McCord. He may have been recognized down there. I can't answer that, sir.
What happened to the property that was taken as a result of your search warrant?
Well, like I stated before, Senator, some of the property is down at our property office, and I understand some of it is being used by the U.S. Attorney's Office in the processing of the case.
A list was made on Saturday, wasn't it, after the search?
Yes, sir.
Why is it that it wasn't available until the 19th at 5 p.m.? I was told that an official of the Democratic National Committee wanted to have a list of those things that were taken out, and the police department could not furnish him a list until 5 p.m. on the 19th.
I couldn't answer that, Senator. Once the property left our hands, it's handled by mobile crime. That's their purpose, and they have officials down there, and you would have to go through them.
Who had charge of the investigation by the
D.C. Police Department?
Inspector Preet, who was that time deputy, who was inspector, he was deputy commander of the CID.
During the handling of this case, did you ever receive any special instructions on how to, or advice from anyone?
No, other than what I said before, we had meetings with the U.S. Attorney's Office just preparing us to go to court on the case, which is just a normal, if you have any type of case, you usually meet with the U.S. Attorney prior to you going into the courtroom.
When was the investigation discontinued by the police department?
Well, for us, Senator, it was almost just discontinued other than testifying in court that Saturday. In other words, the investigation and the running down of the different leads was handled by our burglary squad and the Washington field office. As far as Officer Barrett, Schaffner, and myself, other than testifying in court, it ended on Saturday.
Is this case closed as far as the D.C. Police Department is concerned?
I couldn't answer that right now, sir.
I understand that the chief FBI agent in charge, Mr. Lano?
Yes, sir.
Called your department on June the 22nd complaining of leaks of information to the press. Did he make such a call?
I don't know, sir. He didn't make such a call to myself.
Thank you very much.
Senator Weiss. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just two very brief questions. Sergeant Leap, one for Sergeant Leeper and then one for Officer Barrett. Sergeant, do you think that the result would have been any different if it had been uniformed police in a marked car that had arrived to take care of this matter?
Yes, sir. I don't think there would have been any apprehension.
Why do you say that?
Well, because of the fact that Baldwin would have made the marked car. It has police written on it in six places. It's got a big dome light on top of it, and the officer is dressed in full uniform. There'd be no doubt that it was the police. And I think that just gave us an edge of, say, 5 minutes. And Baldwin didn't make us till he seen Schaffner's gun on the terrace. And then at that time, I don't think he really knew for sure if we were police or not. But he felt we were probably some type of security force, you know, maybe security force for the Democratic Party.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question of Officer Barrett. I understand he's here. Might he be sworn, Mr. Chairman, before I could... Was it the intention to call Officer Barrett separately? I'm sorry.
But he wants to... I'm assuming Jackson. Mr. Barrett, will you stand up? Hold up your right hand. You swear that the evidence you should give to the Senate Select Committee on Presidential Campaign Activities should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, except your God?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Officer Barrett, just one very simple question.
John Barrett, what's your other name for the record?
My middle name is Bruce.
Bruce.
John Bruce Barrett.
John Bruce Barrett, and of my state's your residence and occupation, for the record.
I'm a policeman, Sergeant District Headquarters, 2301 L Street, Northwest.
Officer Barrett, were you the first one to actually apprehend or foresee this group of individuals in that room?
Yes, sir.
At that moment in time, did you hear anything that might have been a conversation coming over a walkie-talkie?
No, sir, I didn't hear anything. I just saw something.
And what did you see?
I saw an arm. I'd stopped at a position just before you entered the secretary's office outside of the chairman's, O'Brien's, and I hesitated there for several minutes because it was dark back in the petitioned area. And while hesitating at that petition, I saw an arm go down in a crouched method as if hiding by stooping, and it went right past my face, and I was startled, and that began the whole mess.
Were these individuals in possession of a walkie-talkie?
Yes, sir. Mr. Barker had a walkie-talkie in his possession.
Did any communication come through that walkie-talkie at any time, to your
knowledge?
There
might have been some communication. I didn't personally hear any. I was too concerned with other matters.
Sergeant Leeper, did you hear any communication come over the walkie-talkie?
No, sir.
I have no further questions.
All right, Senator James McCord Jr. used the alias Edward Martin. Bernard L. Parker used the alias of Frank Carter. Frank Sturgis used the alias of Joseph B. Hamilton and also Frank Fornini. F-I-O-R-I-N-I. Eugenio Martinez used the alias of Gene Valdez. Vigilio R. Gonzalez used the alias of Raul Godoy. G-O-D-O-Y-N.
And you indicated, I believe, that they were registered there at the Watergate Hotel under their aliases?
I don't think all four of them had signed the... I'd have to look back at the duplicates we have.
How many rooms did they have at the Watergate Hotel?
They had two rooms, sir, 214 and 314.
All right, just one more question. Now, what happened to the man across the street, Mr. Baldwin? Did you make any move, or did the police department make any move to investigate what was going on in that particular room? Or did you communicate any suspicion to the burglary staff at the police department to follow through on that?
Not at that time, no, sir.
When was this done?
We made no communications with any the Washington field office or our burglary squad in reference to this man. We see no significant matter at that time, or, you know, it didn't mean anything to us at the time.
You didn't include that in your report?
No, sir.
All right. That's all.
The committee will stand in recess till 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
And so we've reached the end of the first day of Senate hearings into the Watergate affair and other acts of political espionage and sabotage. During the afternoon session, we heard from Bruce Curley, who was a staff aide to H.R. Haldeman, Nixon's former chief of staff, and the man who cleaned out Howard Hunt's White House office safe after he was apprehended in connection with the bugging and break-in of the Watergate affair. Now, in fact, coming up, I believe we do have an interview at some point coming up later on. If not today, then tomorrow, but I think it may be coming later on after I finished, an interview with Bruce Curley, who does answer a few questions about the drilling open and the breaking into Howard Hunt's safe in order to obtain that information and spirit it away. But just to review quickly, we heard from Mr. Curley, who will be back to testify about Hunt, but basically he gave an organizational account of the White House and the way in which the White House was organized, the hierarchy. He admitted under questioning that in order to see the president, as a practical matter, as he put it, one really had to go through either Henry Kissinger, H.R. Haldeman, and especially Mr. Haldeman, or Mr. Ehrlichman. Admission to the president was, as he said, on a need-to-see basis. And then we heard a very interesting and lively account of the actual apprehension of the five men at the Democratic National Committee and told to us by two of the plainclothesmen who apprehended them that night, Officer Leeper and Officer Barrett, who was the second young policeman to take the stand. We have an interview here with Mr. Odell as he emerged from the Senate committee room.
Well, Mr. Odell, you were the first one to go through this sort of baptism of fire up here. What's your reaction to the questioning?
I thought it was, well, first of all, I thought we were going to discuss the organization of the committee and then do some of the other things later. I'm glad it all happened this way. I think it was very fair. I think the senators were very tough. In some cases, I thought that they attempted to make one remember when one just honestly couldn't remember, but I think that they were fair and forthright and honest, and I think that they did a good job. I hope I did.
The underlying question about that Saturday was an additional specific question. Did you know at that time how deeply involved Creep was in this Watergate burglary?
That
Saturday. By no, I mean, what sort of suspicions were you gaining as the day went on?
None. I don't know. I gained no suspicions. And it wasn't until just recently that I realized the committee, that people working at the committee were involved in addition to those who have been prosecuted. But you know, that acronym CREEP, that's interesting, isn't it? Because we have 400 people at national headquarters, Sam. Most of those people aren't involved. Most of those people didn't do anything. And yet, are we to suggest that they're going to go forth for the next rest of their lives writing Committee for the Reelection of the President on their resumes and have that somehow called CREEP? I mean, is that really fair?
Let me ask you.
That was what I was trying to say in my opening statement. I really feel strongly that we ought to find out who the guilty are. We ought to expose them. We ought to prosecute them. But in doing that, justice is served, too, by, you know, not trying to expose the innocent in any way. And I'm proud to have worked for the President's reelection.
What is your relationship now with these people who were your close friends, people like Mr. Magruder and others? What's your personal relationship with them now?
Well, I haven't seen Mr. Magruder in a while. I understand his mother died very recently. I feel very badly that, if let us put it this way, if the things that were done, that were alleged to have been done, were done, then I hope that the guilty are punished. But I feel a great deal of compassion for these people. They're my friends. Mr. Magruder is my friend. I like Mr. Magruder. I like his wife, and I like their four beautiful children.
Do you feel at all tainted, touched by the fact that you were involved in this? As I know that Senator Irwin said that you had no...
Well, I think that anybody who really has been studying Watergate, whether that be people like yourself or people in the government or reporters or other, know that I've not been involved in Watergate. I think everybody's quite aware of that. But I guess you might say that somebody came along and stepped on my toes, but you've got a lot of other people who have four limbs missing, and so, you know, comparatively speaking, not really.
You know, you make a point that there were so many people at the committee who were not involved and who ought not to be tarred by that brush.
Right.
The allegations, as I understand it, are mainly, though, against the leaders
yes,
of the
sir.
Committee, and even men in the White House who are leaders.
Yes, sir.
How does that affect you?
Well, that makes me... Again, I'm saddened by that. Those men, too, are my friends. I've known those men. I'm saddened by that as well.
Do you feel betrayed in any sense?
If some of the things that are alleged to have taken place took place, then I would think that I was and the President.
Well, when
was.
You and your friends were involved, the President was, then you still have faith in the President.
Oh, I think Richard Nixon is the finest president this country's ever had.
Let me ask you this. When you people found out, the ones of you who didn't know anything about it, when suddenly this great shocking truth came out that these people that you've been working with had been conducting these clandestine operations, illegal operations, people that you've been working with day by day for months, what was your reaction? What was the reaction of the other people there, the honest guys?
Well, I think it was a very saddened reaction. I remember feeling when I, having read the papers recently, about the way I felt when I found that Mr. McCord was in jail.
Could you trust him anymore?
That's hard to say. To be very honest, so much has happened that it's difficult to have too much compassion anymore.
Did you ever consider the
That was an interview with Mr. Odle, who, as he emerged from the committee room, still believing that President Nixon will go down in history as the finest president in this country. Now I'd like to switch to that interview with Bruce Curley, H.R. Haldeman's former chief of staff.
What do you intend to tell the investigators about Mr. Hunt's safe? Can you tell us anything at all about that?
Well, not really. I think I'd just wait and tell them. I've gone over the story so many times. Oh, right. It's been in print a couple of times, and I think I'll just wait.
Nobody's ever heard you say it, though.
Well, that's
did you
right.
go in and
I
open
mean, it's
up
on the
safe?
Record that you opened the safe, drilled it open.
I didn't personally drill it open. I had it drilled open.
On whose orders?
On my orders.
I mean, what was the purpose?
Well, to open the safe.
Yes, but I mean, why did you want to open the safe?
Well, because John Dean had asked me to open the safe.
What'd you find in there?
A bunch of papers.
What'd you do with them?
Turned them over to the FBI, or turned them over to John Dean.
And what did he do with them?
I don't know.
Anything besides papers in there? Any electronic equipment, that kind of thing?
Well, there were some things that looked as if they were electronic equipment. I'm not an expert, so I don't know.
You gave those to Dean also?
Yes, that's right.
And that's the last you heard about it?
That's right.
Mr. Dean came to you and said, go and open up Howard Hunt's safe and give me everything that's in there.
That's correct.
Did he tell you why he wanted it?
No.
Did you subsequently learn why he wanted it?
Well, not really. There were many assumptions that were made, but I can't say for a fact that I know.
Mr. Curley, about Roy Shepard, the man who took possession of some 8 cartons of documents reportedly from the White House. How did he get into the White House?
Well, as I understand it, he had under oath, he had a pass from the Department of Transportation, which allowed him to get in.
It wasn't a White House pass.
No, it was not.
Well, does he work for the Department of Transportation? Do we know that? Or does he not work for the Department of Transportation?
I don't know what his relationship is with the Department of Transportation.
But
do you know what he did with all that?
No, I don't.
But was it your impression when you turned over the contents of this safe to Mr. Dean that he was, in fact, investigating the Watergate break-in?
Yes.
Did he tell you this?
No.
Did you?
How did you? Could I just pursue this? Yes. Because the point of Dean's investigation is important. How did you know then that he was investigating?
Well, it was by that time. It was he was the legal person at the White House, and anything that has to do with the people who were or are White House employees that have legal problems or anything to do in anything of this nature would be handled by Mr. Dean.
Dean didn't tell you why he wanted this material from the safe, and you didn't ask him, is that correct?
That's correct.
Did you look at the papers yourself?
No, I did not.
Did you have any compunction, Mr. Curley, about opening up the safe and the person that the FBI was interested in before the FBI got there? Yeah.
No.
Why not?
Because I had a request from Mr. Dean, who is a legal counsel.
Was it, to use the phrase, a presumption of regularity on your part?
Yes.
How many papers
were there materials from that safe which still have not been made available to the investigating authorities?
I really don't know. I don't know what was in that safe other than to describe it as just a pile of papers.
And you took them and put them in a box and gave them to Mr. Dean?
That's correct.
Can you tell us what the electronic devices looked like?
Like a bunch of wires and what looked like a car antenna.
Was there anything like a wig or any sort of disguises
No.
in there? How many papers? Would it have filled up a...
One drawer.
One drawer of papers.
Yeah.
That was Bruce Curley. We'll hear more from him when he comes back to testify about the drilling open of the safe. That won't be until later on in the committee hearings. Final summary about the parallels, the trends which are emerging in this hearing is we've heard from 2 witnesses today who were supposedly in positions of substantial power within the committee for the re-election of the president or the White House, who really demonstrate an amazing lack of curiosity, an amazing dedication to the carrying out, the following through with orders blindly, completely, without question, in this very much the same way that former acting FBI Director L. Patrick Gray destroyed the files on orders from White House people, on orders from John Dean, in fact, the same man who collected Howard Hunt's, the contents of Howard Hunt's safe. Mr. Curley said he turned those documents over. He didn't look at them, so we will probably never know what, if anything, is missing from those files. Just a few more questions to think about on, as they say, on board the sinking ship of state here at the Senate Watergate Committee headquarters. You've been listening to the Senate hearings on the Watergate live from Washington, D.C. We will return to our coverage of the hearings tomorrow morning at 10 of 10 Eastern, I believe it's daylight time. Until then, this is Judy Miller, Pacifica Radio, Washington.